I've tried to shed light on various interconnected facets of depression, such as shame, misattunement, emotional detachment, narcissistic merger fantasies, the inner critical voice, and maladaptive coping mechanisms, just to name a few. See, again, I think you get the sense of how complicated this is. And all of these factors, by the way, and in order to effectively treat depression, all of these factors must be taken into consideration. And therefore, when you can take all of these in conceptually, imagine all these different causes of depression, then you are in a much better position to implement a variety of different techniques, tools to help somebody get out of this depressed state. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Narcissism Dakota. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Mazzella. In the last podcast episode, I discussed an edited down version of a paper that I presented on adolescent depression. What I omitted was my discussion regarding the role of aggression, as well as the questions that came up from the audience. In this episode, I aim to demonstrate the pivotal significance of aggression in depression, address some of the audience's questions, and expand the discussion beyond adolescent experiences with depression to encompass adult experiences as well. While the overarching objective is to broaden our comprehension of depression, I find myself drawn to the idea of revisiting the different pathways and factors that cause depression. Yet, I acknowledge that many of you may have already delved into prior episodes and are eager to forge ahead, exploring alternative avenues to understanding the causes of depression. So, as a middle ground, what I propose is a compromise. For those intrigued by a quick synthesis of the factors we have previously explored on the podcast, I will briefly review them at the conclusion of this episode. Okay, so let's go way back to 1917. In 1917, Freud identified what turned out to be one of the most significant and important features of what was then called melancholia. Today, this is what we call major depressive disorder. This was hidden self-criticism, which he described as self-denigration. He concluded that there must exist a critical and aggressive agency that gets set up in one's mind. But where, you may now ask, where does this critical and aggressive agency originate? In part, this critical voice, played out in the arena of self-reproaches, comes from a relationship with an early caregiver, which has been internalized or taken into ourselves and becomes part of us. When there are situations of excessive frustration caused by negligent or harsh parental figures, what has been referred to as, quote unquote, a bad parental imago is introjected. And these, again, quote, bad objects are then felt to be persecutory. It's important to note that this bad inner object can also be built up from even more subtle but consistent acts of misattunement. For example, in the prior episode, I detailed the case of Mary, a young woman who turned to her mother in a state of distress and was told to not be so negative. I think you can imagine this can easily be interpreted as, what's wrong with you? Or something is wrong with me. And why do you think that way? Or why do I think this way? Why am I so negative? In later life, if this stuff doesn't get worked through, depression comes to represent an ongoing struggle with this now internalized, harsh, and critical representation of an early caregiver. And I put representation of in quotes because it's not necessarily the actual caregiver, although it could be. I'll say more about this momentarily. Must be noted that since this critical voice is now a part of you, that what ends up happening is it's no longer about the voice, but that you feel bad or you are convinced that you have done something bad and therefore deserve to be punished. Now, this is where things can get a bit exaggerated, perhaps. Like, for instance, your caregivers were not as cruel as this, again, internal representation of them, or perhaps you hate yourself out of proportion for your actual shortcomings. For example, when in a depressed state, you may feel guilty that you've done something wrong, much like a small child who, I don't know, let's say there was a premature loss. Premature loss just basically means it's a loss that happened so early on that the child's not really able to fully comprehend and understand the loss and why that loss happened. Again, let's give this as an example. Let's say your parents divorced or separated at an early age before you could really understand that it was not your fault. Despite being told, again, just for instance, that your father loves you very much, it's very common for a young child to believe that dad left or dad is not involved in my life because I am bad or something is wrong with me. And then later in life, perhaps when there's a painful separation or loss of some sort, let's say the end of a romantic relationship, this may turn to, it must have ended because I'm lazy. It must have ended because I'm fat. He left me because I'm not attractive, or I'm stupid, or I'm ugly. You see where this is going. These are all the reproaches. These are the self-reproaches that I mentioned earlier. I must emphasize, these thoughts and feelings are not always conscious. The child may misbehave and get into trouble, but it's very unlikely that they can articulate that they feel quote-unquote bad or that something is wrong with them. Or as an adult, you might find yourself using that critical and devaluing tone when speaking to yourself, yet it operates beneath your level of conscious awareness. In other words, it's not that you're not aware that you're saying this, but you may not consciously question the tone, but rather you immediately accept it. When working with depressed patients under my care, or if there's a loved one in your life who's experiencing depression, this is crucial. It's critical that you engage in conversations about their responses to loss and separation. By doing so, we can help them recognize how they may perceive evidence of their own, again, quote unquote, badness in those experiences. For instance, when a patient suggests during a break in therapy, quote, you must be leaving because you're frustrated with me, unquote, it becomes evident that they believe and are listening to their own inner critical voice. That's that imago. That's the image. The imago is an image. That's the introject. This is what we take into ourselves and we carry it around and it influences the way that we see things and then the way that we feel about ourselves. Therefore, this needs to be addressed and challenged head on. When feelings of inadequacy are closely examined, subtle indicators of loss often emerge. For example, a memory may spontaneously surface from a pivotal point in your earlier life, such as a significant moment in your development. Perhaps you've encountered a situation like this, a caregiver who clings or who induces guilt when you express a desire to spend time with friends. And they remind you, well, we always have dinner together on Saturday nights. Or they say things like, I'll miss you. Or do you really need to go? Or why do you need to do that? See, all of these comments, plus many others, this can leave you feeling that normal acts of separation are hurtful. And also, you're given an implicit message that you're inflicting damage of some sort on someone who is a loved one. And then here again, when you get this implicit message, something that seeps into you, this is the introject that I mentioned a moment ago, we take it in and we carry this around. And we know we carry this around because we arrive at, I must be bad. Or maybe you don't say that. Remember I said it's not always so conscious, but then you end up feeling guilty. When you become depressed, you withdraw from the external world into an internal world where you are now alone with that internal imago, that introject or punitive critical voice. This can be a very dangerous place because this internalized voice will attempt to destroy you. The severity or relentlessness of this voice is a common experience among nearly all individuals I treat who are suffering with depression. In the inner turmoil, the voice of self-criticism often emerges as a formidable adversary, loud and relentless in its persecution. Its presence can be overwhelming, suffocating the possibility of peace and contentment. However, within this lies a paradoxical beacon of hope. The very intensity of its expression renders it conspicuous to a discerning ear, offering a pathway to treatment and transformation. If you're working with a trained and experienced psychotherapist, this is where the most progress on your depression can be made. As I mentioned earlier, you may not be aware of this image you have of yourself and the way you talk to or treat yourself, but through the lens of awareness and understanding, the narrative begins to shift. In my work with depressed patients, I am always curious about the way they speak to themselves. It must be because I'm lazy. I'll stop that immediately and I'll ask them, where did you get that? Or who's saying that to you? Or who's accusing you of being lazy? Where does something like that come from? An unfortunate, but not so uncommon response is something like, and I quote, my father constantly called me lazy when I didn't do the extra math problems he assigned to me. And by the way, I think you got it, but just in case, therein lies the introject. Therein lies the imago, that image that you carry around with you everywhere you go. Even if you pack your bags and you move, you pack this in your bags and you bring it with you unknowingly. If one is harboring a feeling that they are, again, quote unquote, bad or something, and by the way, I keep quoting bad because I don't like that word. It has a value judgment, but I'm just trying to capture the experience of the way these patients think about and treat themselves. And it is a judgment. And that too is something that immediately has to be questioned. But anyway, I was saying, if you're harboring a feeling that you're bad or something is wrong with you, then the work, at least this is the way that I approach it, is to help one identify, label, and allow for full expression of this angry, critical voice. In other words, let's begin to get this out. Let's finally begin to process this and make sense out of it, get some distance from it. As I try to demonstrate, with courage and introspection, you can come to recognize the parallels between this inner voice and the echoes of past authority figures. When your conviction of badness, unlovability, and guilt are called into question, this realization serves as a catalyst for change. With each moment of introspection, the power of self-criticism diminishes, replaced by a newfound sense of self-compassion. This inner critical voice, characterized by severity and persistence, is a common experience among nearly all individuals I treat who are struggling with depression. But I want to remind you that this is not the only path. This is not the only cause of depression. Let's begin with a quick review. In a previous episode, we explored something that we called, quote unquote, shame states. For a deeper dive, I encourage you to revisit episode 15. The title of that episode is it depression or narcissistic deflation? Shame states are recognized as pivotal factors in causing depression. The interplay between excitement, disappointment, and shame is dissected in episode 15, where we underscore the significant role of misattunement. Through various examples, we shed light on how misattunement can serve as a catalyst for shame, thereby amplifying vulnerability to depression. So that's a bit of a review, that it's not just this introject, this critical voice, but depression is also fueled by this misattunement. In episode 22, Navigating the Depths of Depression Among Teens, we explored various components and causes of depression. We delved into scenarios where individuals struggle to articulate their emotions effectively, resulting in an inability to achieve emotional detachment through language. Furthermore, we examined the concept of the narcissistic merger fantasy, where individuals fuse their grandiose self with an idealized other or a group, in that case, a sorority. So I'm ticking this off because these are other causes, other pathways to depression. And then finally, we scrutinize the detrimental effects of ineffective coping mechanisms on depression, such as idealization, devaluation, splitting, and notably, omnipotence, where the initial perception of everything as perfect swiftly transitions to devastation and depression. All right. By now, you're most likely recognizing the complexity of depression and the multitude of factors contributing to this growing mental health issue. Throughout this discussion, drawing from an extensive review of literature spanning since 1917 and my own clinical experiences, I've tried to shed light on various interconnected facets of depression, such as shame, misattunement, emotional detachment, narcissistic merger fantasies, the inner critical voice, and maladaptive coping mechanisms, just to name a few. See, again, I think you get the sense of how complicated this is. And all of these factors, by the way, and in order to effectively treat depression, all of these factors must be taken into consideration. And therefore, when you can take all of these in conceptually, imagine all these different causes of depression, then you are in a much better position to implement a variety of different techniques, tools to help somebody get out of this depressed state. As always, there's so much more to say, but we have to hold off there for now. If you like more information about depression or narcissism in general, please be sure to check out my YouTube channel or take a moment and subscribe to this podcast. Okay, until next time, engage your mind, not your inner critical voice, not your inner imago, not that introject. Okay, bye for now. Disclaimer alert. The Narcissism Dakota podcast is provided for general information purposes only. The content presented in this podcast is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any psychological condition related to narcissism. The content on this podcast should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. For specific advice pertaining to narcissism or any other psychological condition, you could reach me directly. I am an experienced mental health practitioner who is always taking on new patients. If you would just like a consultation, I can do that too.